Hey, you guys, we're doing a matinee show because Jenny's on vacation. Not really, but you know. So we recorded this previously. You know what I mean? So we decided we were going to do some movies that we wanted to catch up on. Some that I had put into the rotation, you know, for the retrospective, but never got the most votes, but that I still wanted to do. And one of these was the 1999 Roman Polanski film, The Ninth Gate.
Yeah, this is a great movie.
Interestingly, I saw this in the theater back when it first came out. And I liked it, but I didn't love it. But I've been wanting to revisit it for a long time, and I hadn't seen it again since then, I don't think.
I'd never seen it.
Yeah, because I think you said you thought you'd seen it, but when we started watching it, you said it didn't seem familiar.
Yeah, I guess I was getting this one confused with, what's that one?
From Hell.
From Hell, yeah. And then Ninth Gate, I think I was getting that confused with, like, that poster of, wasn't it called The Gate with the demons coming up out of the ground?
Yeah, that was like that kids movie from the
80s.
Yeah,
like a kids movie. Yeah.
Yeah,
that Canadian movie. So I got it confused with those two somehow. But no, I saw it and I was like, oh man, this is awesome. It's almost kind of like, I think I mentioned it at the time. It kind of reminded me of Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut, but better.
Yeah, it definitely has something that maybe Eyes Wide Shut didn't have. I don't know. I kind of want to get into it. And it's funny because I was watching a couple other like reviews of it and they said pretty much the same thing, that it was similar to, or it had the same vibe to it because it has like the satanic cult and we're really? All going to the house and everything like that.
So it wasn't just me.
Yeah. And actually I was watching, if you guys are not subscribed to Grumpy Andrew's House of Horror, I love that guy. He's like a British dude. And he did a review of this and he said the same thing that I said, that he had watched it like when it first came out and he was just kind of like meh, but then when he watched it again he loved it.
Yeah.
And he said, and I actually kind of thought this, I don't think I said it to you at the time, but I kind of thought this when we were watching it, the one scene where Johnny Depp's character Dean Corso, when he first sees quote unquote the girl who he calls Green Eyes, the scene where he first sees her in that lecture hall very much recalls the scene where the protagonist sees the witch girl. I think it's Mater Lacrimosa in Dario Argento's Inferno. And I wondered if that was deliberate. I mean, I imagine it probably was because the framing of it was very similar and it reminded me of it. And I was watching that review and he said the same thing. And I was like, oh, my God. I thought of that too. But yeah, so maybe that's why it's like an early hint that, you know, the girl is supernatural in some way.
It's kind of like Eyes Wide Shut in a way, but better. It's better because it's more mission oriented. You got Johnny Depp. He's playing this like a book, an ancient book specialist. And he finds books and sells them to collectors. He knows everything about forgery and, you know, he knows what a book is worth, knows fucking these obscure titles off the top of his head, knows the history behind all these books. And he's working for, I guess, himself. He's kind of like a hired hand or a mercenary and also like a detective tracking down who has these books. And it's pretty cool. And it kind of drew me into it because it doesn't have a whole lot of characters and it's very kind of like mission oriented. He gets hired to fucking find these other two books. To match these other, this guy's got this satanic book. He knows there's two other copies and he wants them. Or at least he wants to compare them. And he's got to find them. And then it takes Johnny Depp down in this journey between all these damn Satanists. And he's like a really wealthy European Satanist. And he doesn't believe in any of this shit. But he starts to. And it's pretty cool. It's kind of like a puzzle too. He's looking at all these books and trying to see the differences between them and finding little hidden clues in these old books. That book was from the 1600s, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. It was written by, well, the thing about it, now this is actually based on a novel. It was based on a novel called The Club Dumas by Arturo Perez Reverte, which came out in 1993. It's a loose adaptation. Some of the satanic book shit is the same, but the novel, as far as I can tell, I haven't read it, but I like watched a couple other people's summations of it. The novel is more concerned about, it has all that satanic book shit in it, but it also has like a thing about a rare edition of the Three Musketeers. That's a whole other subplot that's in there. And the ending of the book is very, very different. And the way the book ended seemed a little little bit lame, so I'm kind of glad that they changed it, like, for the movie. So this was co-written and directed by Roman Polanski, in case I didn't mention that.
Yeah, he's a shit bird.
But, well, yeah, but
the dude can make a damn movie.
But he still makes good movies, yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, he was great in The Tenant.
I just got a comment on that the other day that said, I just watched this movie and I don't understand the goddamn thing about
what,
it.
What, The Tenant?
But yeah.
you weren't paying attention. Go back and watch it again.
Yeah, well, and I kind of feel like, well, Roman Polanski's movies, much like Kubrick's movies, much like, you know, anything like that, these kind of, you really need to see them a few times.
Yeah.
And The Ninth Gate is actually one of those. I'm not saying it's his best movie, but it's actually much, much better than I remembered it being.
Our generation grew up with HBO and Cinemax being basically our version of the internet. There was no internet. So you just watched the same movies over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And something like a Polanski film gets better every time you see it. You go, why'd that happen? So then you see it again a couple of days later and you're like, oh, yeah, yeah. And you're a kid when all this is going on. That when we were kids. And The Tenet got fucking drilled into me.
Yeah.
All right. This is a movie I would have liked as a kid back in that era had they shown this to us over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, weird, it has kind sickness. Of like everything I like about it. I like occult, like movies about occult shit. I love stories about books and especially like old creepy books and like old creepy dudes with big mansions with big creepy libraries. I love, love, love that kind of shit. So this is right in my wheelhouse. Yeah. And I also love, it's almost, it's kind of like a noir. It's basically like a detective story.
Like a detective story, right.
But also with like a satanic element to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He gets this job, man, to track down these other two books from this creepy old super rich dude.
Boris Balkin. Yeah. Played by Frank Langella.
He doesn't tell you at first, he doesn't tell you he's a Satanist, but he must be a Satanist when you're first meeting him because every book that he has is about the devil. And his library is probably like on the 20th floor of a fucking skyscraper. And it's all glass and hermetically sealed. And you can walk through there and there's all these tomes, you know, they're hundreds and hundreds of years old. It's got to be like, based on how much, and some of these like one-offs and old forgotten books. And, you know, once they kind of establish how much these books are worth, you look at his library and it's got to be tens of millions of dollars.
Sure.
If not hundreds of millions of dollars worth of damn books that nobody else has read because there's only like a couple copies, maybe one copy, and he's got it. And this was before internet, and they didn't Xerox and fucking take pictures and post on the internet what was in the book. If you had the book, only you knew. And turns out there are books like that. I asked Jenny, do books like that actually exist where it's like one copy or two copies? You're like, yeah. And the dude who owns it doesn't tell you what's in it. That's part of collecting them.
Yeah, I mean, if it's in a private collection, like I know that, you know, Google Books and, you know, the Gutenberg Project and stuff like that have been really trying to digitize books so people, like researchers, can access them. But if there's only one or two copies of a book in the world, as is the situation in this movie, and they're in private collections, and that person does not want to digitize what's in there, then probably no one will ever know what's in there.
And these are like billionaires and multimillionaires that own these books, and they're not going to share them. And they're like, they're in competition with the other collectors to own these books. And they're in competition to kind of like hide what's in the book. It's like for their own purpose, you know, oh yeah, I used to own that book. You know, there's that kind of shit, you know.
Yeah.
But if you had the book and nobody else has really seen it, it's just a mystery. And the other collectors are like hating on you. Yeah, he's got that book. You know, he's got it. I don't know.
Well, there's competition in every subculture. Right, you know what it's like.
Right. Which, and it's kind of cool that the story is set in this world of these damn collectors. And these particular collectors are extremely rich Satanists. And that one dude, his whole library, every book was about the devil. And they were like shit from the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s. And some of them, only he had them. And it's kind of a fascinating subject.
One of the interesting things about this movie, though, and I didn't really realize it until I was thinking about it later, but other than Boris Balkin, who, like I said, he's played by Frank Langella, and he's the one that initially hires Johnny Depp to go on this fucking mission or whatever, who is real ruthless and will kill people to get what he wants and stuff. The other Satanists, other than Lena Olin's character, she's a shithead, But some of the other ones that are kind of like Satanists or into the devil, they're not really that terrible of people. They're more
into it for the orgies.
Yeah.
Get into that.
I did it for the orgies, man.
Yeah. That one old lady's, my orgy days are over. Bunch of rich European aristocracy having these little fuck fests, dressing up in outfits. Not unlike the fucking goth fetish scene.
Yeah, it was just kind of like that. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to eat babies or anything like that. It was just basically just kind of like a Satan
they were
goth
LARPing.
Play. Yeah, they kind of thing. Yeah. Except, like I said, except for Frank Langella's
character. Some of them were serious.
He was actually even shitting on Lena Olin's character because she was doing that whole, hey, we're going to do all the orgy with the robes and everything. Yeah. And he just thought that was stupid.
Yeah, he's like, how dare you do this in the Temple of the Master?
Because he was like super, super into things.
Yeah.
But see, that's the thing. You know that he's like shifty from the beginning. When he first hires like Johnny Depp, I keep calling him Johnny Depp. His character name is Dean Corso, but let's be honest, it's Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
I mean, he pretty much plays his own.
It's a little bit more of a serious version of himself, though.
He's kind of restrained.
Kind of like in From Hell, except not as English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a little bit, this reminds me a little bit of Secret Window, too, that Stephen King adaptation that he was in right around the same time. I feel like that came out right around the same time as this, maybe a year or two. Before or after. But so Boris summons Johnny Depp, who's like the best in the business. And
he summons Johnny Depp
as one does. And he's like, okay, basically he's like, I have this book, which is called The Nine Gates of the Kingdom of Shadows, which was written in the 17th century by this dude named Aristide Torquia. And the rumor has it that this book was written in collaboration with the devil himself.
Yeah, he's signing it.
And that Aristide Torquia was burned at the stake, like back then, because he was supposed to be in league with the devil and he wrote these books. Now, he wrote, there were a few copies of this book. Now, Boris Balkin has one and he's like, and I'm pretty sure it's, you know, legit, but there are two other copies in the world. I want you to go to Europe and find those two copies and compare them to mine because I want to make sure that those other two aren't forgeries. Now, this mission, and he gives him like a ridiculous, they never tell you how much money he gives him, but he just looks at the check and he's like, oh, all right. You know what I mean? And he keeps saying like as it's going along that he wants to keep adding more and more money. So it's apparently like a shit ton of money. And now this is a little bit of a misdirection on Boris Balkin's part, as becomes clearer as the story goes on. It's not entirely, the reason isn't entirely bullshit. He does want the other two books to compare them, but not because he thinks they're forgeries. You know what I mean? Mm. So, should we spoil this? This came out a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay.
I don't really care.
So basically, now I will say the first part of this movie, you know, where Johnny Depp gets summoned by Boris, is set in New York. And obviously, because Roman Polanski is not allowed to come to the United States, all the New York stuff was either done on a set, as I think some parts of Eyes Wide Shut were as well, like some of the New York City streets, or if they're in a car or something like that, it's green screened. It's not terrible, but it is like slightly distracting.
I don't know. It depends on how you look at it.
Yeah.
I liked everything about the movie. Visually.
I did too.
All right. It does take you into a certain zone.
Yeah.
It started for me when you see the Satanist library and he's in a skyscraper and he's looking out that glass window and you can see in the background cars going across the bridge and it looked like it was actually on location. If it wasn't, it was a really good simulation.
It
wasn't on location.
No.
You could see some stars in the sky, and in the distance you see an airplane going, and it's very subtle.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It does make you feel like you're in a location, but it's kind of like a stylized location, very slightly. It's just, it gave me a Kubrickian feel.
It's a little otherworldly.
A little bit otherworldly, kind of like inside the Overlook.
Yeah, not quite as much as that, but it does have a little bit of veneer of otherworldliness, which I think adds a lot to the story, actually, because it has like a creepy like atmosphere to it.
I'm going to say right off the bat, people, I think the movie's a masterpiece. I'd never seen it. I'm going, this is fucking, I was loving it all the way. It pulled me right in and I got a short attention span. I'm not tolerant to meandering stories or things that are poorly edited. There's You've got to be really good to fucking pull me into a tale, especially a tale about dude books. Come on.
That's what I was thinking. I was wondering if you would, because I was going to say too, this is a very long movie. It's like 2 hours and 15 minutes or something.
No, I got pulled right into it. I was like, okay, all right. It's very mission oriented, which I'm into that.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like a mercenary detective book dude.
Yeah.
All right. He's an expert at what he's doing, which I respect that. So I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah. Find a fucking book, Johnny Depp. Me and you are going to find a book together, Johnny Depp. All right.
On a journey.
Yeah. We're going to go. Yeah. So it has that element to it. So very effective in getting you interested in these characters and this story. It's very hard to do, especially with me. I'm very resistant to the tricks that they use, even though the simplest, most tried and true tricks are the ones that work the best on me. If you try to get too fucking fancy, I got that 10-15 minute rule kicks in, where if I'm not feeling it in 10 or 15 minutes, I will never feel it.
Yeah.
This one fucking almost right away.
And which is interesting, because like you said, it's kind of about, it's set in the antique book world. I mean, there is like kind of the satanic shit on top of it, which is kind of cool. And he's being followed by people, and people like are ending up murdered. So that's like pretty exciting. But the pacing of it is very, it's not slow necessarily, but it's very deliberately paced. I will say that. It's very deliberately paced. Everything is just goes along in a very stately.
Well, they're not pushing you through it.
Yeah, they're not rushing it.
It's going through at the rate that it should go, to give you a feeling of like you're there, and that you're in on this. To me, the movie reminded me of the trailers of National Treasure. I never seen the movie National Treasure.
Oh, what, the Nicolas Cage?
The Nicolas Cage. You know how he's finding the secrets behind this and that.
Yeah. See, I like movies like that. Although I don't think I've ever seen that movie. Or if I have, I have. I just didn't remember that much.
I've never seen it. I played the video game on Xbox, but I never seen it. All right, and this movie kind of reminded me of the trailer.
Yeah.
To National Treasure. All right. I don't know if that movie's any good. That's something I ought to see eventually. I mean,
You'd probably like it. Like I said, I've seen it one time, like right around when it came out, maybe a year or two later. And I remember liking it, but not making that much of a
Imagine if Stanley Kubrick did the trailer to National Treasure. That's kind of way the feeling.
Yeah.
Of the movie.
Okay.
You understand
that? I'm vibing with that.
I'm trying to give the feel of the movie. Yeah. It's like that.
This is, like you said, it is kind of Kubrickian, but it also has kind of a noir sort of thing to it. And I like, too, like the whole color palette of it, the score, everything. It kind of, I don't know, it has a really nice color palette that it uses. I can't really explain it. It's not
kind of soft.
It's like not subdued necessarily, but it's very like rich and velvety.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The came out in 2000, I think, right?
1999.
1999. Okay. Yeah. The decor, most of the stuff is very 90s, like shit from 95, 96, a lot of shit from 94. That's what's in the sets or the apartments.
Like in his apartment, yeah.
Yeah, and even the clothes is very 90s, the haircuts. But it looks really good in this format, you know. It was kind of like the height of the 90s stuff. The color palettes that was used inside of fucking cutting edge apartments and stuff. It was kind of cool to see that again. You know, it's like, I remember that nice shit looked like that. Yeah. From back in the 90s. You know what I mean? Like somebody's apartment down in Boston or something. You know, if they were professional, that's the way their damn apartment looked. Same color schemes and stuff. It's just kind of neat.
Yeah.
And the clothes were kind of just nondescript. Their style was just not to have a fucking style. That's the only way I can describe it.
Yeah.
It didn't look 70s. It didn't look 80s. It didn't even look 2000s. It was just them damn wool pants and the fucking shirts and you're going to wear a sweater and then you're going to have a jacket. It's just, you know what I mean?
Well, everything was kind of subdued and dialed back because I think the 70s and the 80s were kind of real over the top.
Yeah.
So I think everyone was just kind of like sick of all that like excess and wanted to look normal again.
Yeah. 90s mundane clothes for just regular people were real kind of plain in a way.
Yeah.
Just kind of generic, kind of a generic look to them. They look like something that would be on a fucking photograph inside a corporate brochure showing you houses or something. You know what I mean? It's just what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I mean, although I didn't, I mean, the clothes in this didn't really like pop out to me.
Yeah, they're generic.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But in a way, that's good because it kind of keeps you, it's not distracting.
Yeah, it was, if you were to tell me that it came out in 2008, I'd say, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't really.
It really wouldn't matter.
Because everything, like you said, everybody just kind of had plain suits or, like, you know, generic. When they go to, like, Lena Olin's character, she just has kind of a black, you know, like, nice pantsuit or whatever that you could probably wear nowadays.
So, yeah, so it's hard to place it in time other than the cars, you know, driving around and shit like Dodge Vipers and stuff. You know, it's hard to put it. The film did not become dated. It aged very well.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It didn't really seem all that dated to me. No. Other than, like, a little bit of ropey green screening, like, in, you know, just in the car scenes, like, where they're driving, like, in the New York scenes. But honestly, you know, that's just, like, the first maybe 20, 30 minutes of the movie. And then it goes to Europe. And it was shot in Portugal, Spain, France, shit like that. And all that shit was obviously
done on location. Well, in certain ways, it is dated. Because modern Hollywood of the past fucking 5-10 years is not as coherent as this.
Yeah, this
the
is
storytelling is very good.
This is a surprisingly very focused.
Yeah, very.
I mean, it's long, and like I said, it's very deliberately paced. Yeah. But everything happens for a reason. Everything happens, you know. This thing happens, and so he goes on and does the other thing.
Right.
And it's a very deliberate, you know, investigation, because the first thing he's doing, he has to go to Europe. He's like, okay, well, first I'm going to look into the person that owned, you know, Boris's book before. So he goes and checks her out. And then, you know, then he goes to Europe and he wants to see, you know, the other people that have had it and the people that had it before them, because he's trying to get all this information about it. Now, along the way, and I don't even think we've mentioned this much other than right at the beginning, along the way, he starts suspecting that Boris has maybe hired this mysterious woman who is never named in the movie. She's just called the girl in the credits. And she keeps, like, turning up, man. Like, the first time he sees her is in New York at Boris Balkan lecture that he's giving about demonology and witchcraft or whatever. And then he sees her on a train in Portugal or Spain. And he's like, hey, like, he at first assumes that Boris has hired her to follow him around to make sure he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. I'm thinking that's what I don't think he ever says that outright, but
suspects that she's a fucking private investigator.
Yeah, that she's following him around. Yeah. However, as the movie goes on, you discover that there's a lot more to that woman.
Yeah.
than
she has some paranormal abilities.
Yeah, which I really, you know what? I love the way that's introduced, because for a long time, he keeps seeing her, and it's a little bit weird because, like, he sees her in a library, like, through this crack in the books, and then, you know, he looks again and she's not there, like, but, you know, plausible deniability, she could have run away. But then he gets attacked by the boyfriend of the woman that used to own Boris's book. You know, there's a whole thing there because she's kind of like trying to get the books too, and she's willing to like kill people. But this woman who he ends up calling Green Eyes, like, because she won't tell him her name, she shows up and starts kicking the dude's ass. And there's just a shot. She's walking down the stair, like steps outside, and then she flies. Like, she just goes, shh.
Yeah, it's more like a glide.
Yeah, she like kind of glides down. And it's like really jarring. And it's like really, really.
She came down the steps without touching him.
Yeah.
And just, ooh. Like she levitated.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good. It looked good. It looked good, though.
I just I liked the way that they just kind of like, because you're led to believe that she's a person. And she does have human qualities, too, because in that fight, like, she does kick that dude's ass, but he does, like, elbow her in the face and her nose starts to bleed.
Yeah.
So she's obviously not completely supernatural, but she has supernatural powers.
Well, I thought she was either an angel or a demon.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's resolved later what she is. But
yeah, she's basically, and there it's weird because there's this one channel, I can't remember what it's called, but this dude made several videos that were like 8 or 9 minutes long, just going into various aspects of this movie, like in different theories about it and who she was. Now, at first you kind of think, you know, once her supernatural abilities are established, and she also kind of has something of she's like has psychic powers, kind of like she knows things that there's no possible way that she can know. She turns up places where he is and he can't figure out, you know what I mean? And she disappears real quick and shit like that. So, you know, that there's something supernatural about her, but she does say something at one point because they start kind of teaming up and working together. And he jokes that, oh, you're my guardian angel. And she says something like that. So, but then as the story goes on, I don't know. Well, I don't know. She could be a guardian angel, but I think she's maybe a demon. Maybe that's not a bad thing.
Demons are angels.
That's what I mean. She's kind of like...
Yeah. You have to make the you have to make that call yourself when you see the end of the movie.
Yeah, I definitely do think. I mean, she's obviously has something to do with.
I think she's kind of neutral in between, like a demon.
Well, she's helping Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Because the thing about it is that
she also chose him over the other ones.
Yeah, because the thing about it is that what Boris Balkin is trying to do is he's actually trying to get all the books together, because in each of the books, there are all these woodcuts, like these illustrations. And the reason he wanted to compare his copy to the other two copies in Europe was that he wanted to see there's like little bitty differences in the what?
He didn't actually know. Remember?
Well, yeah, he was like checking.
He said, yeah, he said he wanted to see the other two books and he wanted to care. He wanted Johnny Depp. I'm going to call him Johnny Depp.
Well, yeah, so
he wanted him to carefully compare the two to see if there were any differences.
Yeah.
And it was demonstrated early on once he meets the twins, which you got to see the movie there's that I'm talking about. They showed him that the text was identical. Even the errors in the text, there's an S that was fucked up in part of the print. It is the exact same text. So Depp started going to the woodcuts. So there must be a difference in these pictures. And he did notice that there were differences. Little stuff like scissors in the right hand in one woodcut.
Yeah, were they keys or scissors? I couldn't remember. I think they were keys.
Keys in the left hand. And then they showed certain parts of pictures of walls and mazes. And sometimes the doors were open in one woodcut. And in the other print, the door had been
like bricked over.
And then the signature at the bottom was different. One of them, I don't want to spoil all of it because then you're, because it's kind of the puzzles behind the meaning of the.
Well, that's kind of what makes it fun.
Right. There was differences in the pictures.
Yeah.
And you had to know the differences in the pictures in order to damn do this right.
Yeah.
This ritual to open up to the ninth gate where Satan was.
He's like, open the ninth gate so I can come out. I'm in here. I'm trapped.
So one copy wasn't enough. You had to have all three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is something that kind of comes out. But, right. You know, even knowing that, I still think it's a really good watch because I just like, I don't know. I like all that. And you know, and like I said, as Johnny Depp goes through thing and starts solving the mystery, you know, all the other people that own the books, like other people that are just kind of like, you know, kind of on the margins or whatever, get murdered. You know, the book gets stolen at some point. And so it's just kind of like, I like that you sort of compared it to National Treasure. It's like are they like the Da Vinci Code or something like that?
Da Vinci Code.
But not as like cheesy.
No.
Is that necessarily?
So the guy that hired Johnny Depp, he wasn't 100% sure. He just knew that the book that he had was authentic. All right. And he believed that it would work, but he tried it and it didn't work.
I love that scene too. Like at the end.
He tried it and it didn't work. So he wanted to see the other two copies to see if there were if there were any differences, because if there were differences that might answer why his opening of the ninth gate didn't work. And yeah, it was Depp found out quickly that there were differences in those pictures and the guy who hired him instantly knew it was up. He's like, okay, I need them all.
Yeah, I need all of them then, because you can't have just one. Yeah.
I guess he had already thought of that you might need more than one book.
And I feel like throughout the course of the movie, too, you're led to believe that Boris, he's not supernatural or anything, but he's for sure following Johnny Depp around. Because he'll call him, and Johnny Depp's be like, where are you? Where are you? Yeah. And he's just like, won't answer him.
Yeah.
So I think he was following him the whole time as well.
Or using some kind of psychic abilities.
Because he did show up, like, at the end, too. So I think he had been, like, following him the whole time. Because at first, as I said, you think that the green eyes girl, you know, the mystery woman, you think that she's following Johnny Depp around on that guy's behalf. But you find out, as the story goes on, that that's not exactly what's happening.
He may have had some satanic abilities himself, because why else? Why else would he, you know, that'd be the only explanation of why he believed in that book so much.
Yeah.
So he had seen some supernatural shit.
Yeah. I mean, he must have. I do think that it was kind of, I don't know if it was stated outright or if it was implied that he had tried to like summon the devil before with just his book and it didn't work. So maybe he said, oh, well, maybe this isn't, you know, maybe this one isn't the real one or whatever. So maybe he didn't know that that's what was going to happen when he sent Johnny Depp out on the mission.
He wasn't really sure. He wasn't sure.
Yeah.
It was implied during that initial conversation that he did try to open the ninth gate and that it didn't work.
Yeah.
He wanted the other books.
Yeah.
To see if there were any differences, because the differences might have been the key, the reason why.
Yeah.
And then he finds out that there were differences and he goes, okay, I need all the books.
Yeah, and at that point, he tries to, like, give Johnny Depp a bunch more money.
Much more money.
And he doesn't say outright, he just says something like, you need to get them, like, at any cost.
Yeah, he means he could kill these people.
Yeah, and then Johnny Depp's like, I've never done anything that illegal, he says.
And then he says, add another zero under the end of your payment.
Your fee.
Another zero. You know, he did that a couple times.
Yeah.
So he was offering him tens of millions of dollars.
I'm imagining. They never tell you how much, but I like that too because it doesn't date the movie.
Yeah, well, he looked at it. He was kind of stunned at how much money it was when he first saw that check.
Yeah.
But they never tell you what it is.
Yeah.
And then he says, add another zero. And then he added another zero. So it must have been tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions.
I mean, you would
think. Because the dude was filthy rich. And according to the other Satanist woman, the one in the wheelchair, she said that her and the other Satanists believed that their wealth was due to them being in this cult of Satanists, that it was Satan that was giving them all this wealth.
Yeah. That's so, right. She did say that, didn't she? The Baroness. So
they believed in this.
Yeah. Yeah. And
evidence, evidently.
I really did like the way this was kind of resolved. Like I said, it's almost kind of like, some of the people were shitty. Like I said, you know, Boris was a shitty person because obviously, you know, he killed people to get what he wanted. And Lena Olin's character was also shitty because she was also willing to kill people to get what she wanted. Because I think it was her that killed that other bookseller, like in New York.
My during the time I was watching the movie, I got the impression that they were what you called back in the 70s, satanic witches.
Yeah.
All right. Kind of like in the movie, The Legacy. From, what was that, 1978, 79?
Yeah.
Where, they actually did have fucking these satanic powers. Witchcraft. They could kill you. Make you, you know what I mean? Curse you and die, and you would die.
Yeah.
Or they would kill you in weird ways, like make a damn mirror explode and you get hit with a bunch of shards. Or the fire leaps out of the fireplace.
Or make you choke on a chicken bone.
Or make you choke on a chicken bone.
Like happened to Roger Daltrey.
Yeah. Or you jump in a pool and then when you try to get back up, you can't break through the surface of the water, you drown.
Yeah.
They could do stuff like that.
That was a good movie.
Yeah, it was
a good movie. Yeah, we did a review of that before. But yeah, it's kind of like the same. These people struck me. I mean, Lena Olin had her little group with all the robes and everything. But the other Satanists, like Boris and the Baroness and them, they seemed more like just random, like just people that were really interested in the occult and were interested in Satanism, not so much, you know, in a cult. They were kind of like freewheeling. And that one guy that owned it, Vargas, I think his name was, the guy that ended up drowned in the pond. I think that guy didn't really believe in it. He had one of the books, but just because he was a book collector and he had a shit ton of them and he was interested in occult books, but I don't think he believed in any of that. You know what I'm saying? So he wasn't in on all of it.
The two twins weren't Satanists. The guys that were book dealers.
Yeah.
They weren't Satanists, but they believed it.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
They were like, no, he was with the devil. And they were laughing. The devil did write that book.
Yeah.
With them. And then it turns out later they were part of the plot twist. Not really a plot twist. They had made sure. They had done some shit to try to make sure you couldn't open a gate.
Yeah. So actually, now that you put it that way,
That one page.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how that turned out. But so I kind of feel like I said, I don't really want to spoil the ending. Yeah. I feel like some people didn't really like the ending. It's weird because this movie came out. It didn't make a shit ton of money. It made its money back in the U.S. It kind of got real mixed reviews. Some people just thought it was kind of meh or like it went on too long or whatever.
It was spoiled back then.
I think that, well, it got better. It got a better reception in Europe, I think. Yeah. You know, I think they were more into it. American audiences just didn't love it. I mean, like I said, it didn't lose money.
This
but
came out in a time when Hollywood had already made a bunch of good movies the 10 years prior. So it was a high time for Hollywood. They were pickier. But the thing is, the critics were always full of shit. There was. Had this come out recently, the critics would have liked it, probably. I don't think they would have.
Yeah, and like and I said,
people would have liked it better.
Yeah.
The audiences were spoiled back then.
And I think, too, this is a movie that maybe kind of like Eyes Wide Shut, because the first time I saw Eyes Wide Shut, because this kind of reminds me of that a little bit. And it reminds me, like I said, of Dario Argento's Inferno a little bit, too. Not as wacky as that, but it's kind of along the same lines. I kind of feel like this is one of those ones that you see it the first time you see it and it's like pretty good, but it's like underwhelming. But then if you see it again, you're like, oh, like, because you pick up on a lot more stuff. This is definitely one that I think if you saw it a long time ago and you didn't love it,
you probably like it.
You should probably watch it again, because I saw it in the theater and I remember liking it, but I couldn't remember hardly anything about it. I said, all I remember about this, because you asked me, I said, I think it's about Satanists in a book. I think that's all I remembered.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretty much. And so... So I really liked like watching it again. So I'm like, wait, that's way, way better than I remember it being. This would kind of
fit in real good with, like I said, Eyes Wide Shut and maybe like Heredity. You know what I mean?
Hereditary.
Hereditary. Yeah, I saw the movie, I fell asleep in it. But like this, the ones with the more of kind of the satanic overtones. You know, yeah. I mean, it's just right there with that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to remake it today, that they would do it more like Hereditary.
Probably.
Is it called Hereditary or Hereditary?
Yeah, Hereditary.
Hereditary.
You say it wrong every single time.
That's how I do.
I just say things wrong. There's nothing you can do about it.
I'm fucking watching movies. I'm not a scholar. I want to see that one again, though. I fell asleep in it.
Yeah. I'm going to do it again because Zach keeps asking me to do it for my show. And I've told him I do want to do it for my show. For my Flickers of Fear show. Yeah. You can even star if you want to. If you like it. If you're just going to shit on it, then no. But... I told him, I said, and I don't say this about many movies. That movie stressed me out so much when I watched it the first time that I'm anxious. I want to watch it again, and I don't want to watch it again because it made me so anxious the first time.
Well, what was funny is that I didn't really like that when I fell asleep in it, all right? But I want to give it a second shot. Might have been my mind state at the time.
Yeah.
Because sometimes your mindset really affects how you see something. I didn't like that one, but I liked Midsommar a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that you'd probably think that I would have liked Midsommar even less.
But no, I thought that while we were watching. I said, Midsommar. Oh, you're really going to hate this one.
I want both of those on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I definitely actually want to watch Hereditary, even though I'm like, even though I know what's coming and that somehow like makes it worse. It's like, I don't know. It's just like a really anxiety inducing movie for me. And I'm not the only person that said that. You know what I mean? I've seen like a bunch of other videos because I know there's like always those edgelords out there. It's like, that wasn't scary. What are you doing?
I woke up during the creepy parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is one of those movies, and I've said this before, if you're going to watch a horror movie, if you're going to watch any movie, you know, unless it's just some fun thing that you can drink beers or whatever, if you're going to like commit to watching a movie like that, then just let yourself like be immersed in it. Let it scare you. That's what it's trying to do. You know what I mean? Let yourself get into the characters. I mean, if you can't, then that's fine. But I'm just saying that I don't like people that they'll watch horror movies, but then at the end, they'll be, that wasn't scary, that was dumb. Yeah. But the reason that they do that is because they're closing themselves off. They're not letting themselves get immersed in the story or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's for them, it's not going to be scary because they're just like, they close themselves off and they don't care. So it's like, why watch it then?
There was just something about the tone of Hereditary when I first saw it. I was watching it, and the little girl that was doing the fucking weird shit, I was like, come on, man. And it was... I didn't like her. And when the car smashed her head off and shit, the timing and the way it was... It happened so fast, and because I didn't really like her, I laughed at the time, and a lot of people thought it was inappropriate. But that was my reaction. I was like, yeah, fuck her. And then I fell asleep right after it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why. Just,
he was in one of his moods
I was
that
just,
day.
I was in a mood. I just, it looked funny to me.
One of his little moods.
It just looked funny to me. I had to see it again, though. I had to see it again.
I mean, that little girl was weird for sure.
She was
creepy, though. That little girl was fucking creepy.
And when her head got smashed, I enjoyed it. So I was just like, fuck that chick. and then I felt better and fell asleep. I guess. But then I woke up and there was all kinds of weird satanic displays of like dead bodies and shit. And I was like, oh man, it's fucking weird.
You missed it.
I woke up during one time where Shauna was with us.
And yeah, Shauna
was going, oh, like that. And I woke up to see somebody crawling across the ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, it was pretty crazy.
One of the best things about Hereditary, and like I said, I didn't even, you got to like watch a bunch of videos about this. There's so much shit in here that the first time you watch it, you didn't notice. There's so much shit going on in the background. There's all kind of symbolism that you didn't notice. Just like in Midsommar, they did that too.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's people in the background that you don't notice. It's just like, it's so, so creepy. Oh my God. I can't even believe how much effort like Ari Aster put into that shit, like putting all that stuff in the background that you probably weren't even going to notice. But if you like see videos of it and they point out every single time that there's somebody standing back in the shadows or there's somebody standing out on the lawn that you didn't see or some shit like that, it's like super, super creepy. Yeah. But like, you're, I think part of your brain picks up on it, which, you know, even though I didn't notice the people, I think my brain, part of my brain was picking up on it because that's what was causing me such anxiety. Like the whole fucking movie was that my brain was like, there's people everywhere. Oh my God. And it was kind of like that. But yeah, so this movie, The Ninth Gate, it's, you know, not, it, I feel like it's, it kind of has a Rosemary's Baby vibe too. I mean, you know, with the whole satanic cult angle and whatnot.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
You know, but just if you haven't seen it, or if you just saw it a long time ago and you didn't really care for it, I would suggest watching it again. I mean, because I really, really liked it much better the second time. I didn't hate it the first time. It's just, I liked it at the time, but it didn't make much of an impression. Like, I didn't remember much about it.
I didn't see it at the time.
Yeah, see, I saw it in the theater. Like, I distinctly remember going to the theater to see it.
Trying to put myself, my mindset back in 99, I don't think I would have liked it as much in 99. I think you have to be a little bit older to understand, to appreciate this movie.
Yeah, maybe.
A little bit of an older audience. I don't know, maybe I would have enjoyed it. I saw Eyes Wide Shut before this. Eyes Wide Shut came out when?
Well, it's weird because I think Eyes Wide Shut came out the same year as
Same year. Because I saw that one and liked it.
So it's really weird how there was like a weird synergy going on between us. Because one couldn't rip off the other one because I think they were making them at the same time.
I saw Eyes Wide Shut in the theater and I liked it.
I saw that in the theater as well.
Yeah, I liked it. And a lot of people didn't really seem to like it. Although it was getting a lot of hype. People go going, eh.
Well, yeah, it was Kubrick's last movie, you know what I mean? So obviously that's going to be a lot to live up to.
Yeah, I was watching it, and I had a good time watching it.
I did too. I didn't like it as much as his other ones. I still don't. Yeah. But, you know what I mean? That's the thing I kind of like about doing this show and like revisiting some of these movies that maybe we saw once like along like 20 years ago and forgot about, is that sometimes, I mean, you get an entire, it recontextualizes the entire movie for you, because when you saw it the first time, like when I saw this back in 1999, like my fucking entire, you know, life was different. And even though I dug it, I kind of forgot about it. But so like you get to watch it again, just from a totally different perspective. And it's almost kind of like seeing it again as a new movie that you're a little bit familiar with.
You sure the Eyes Wide Shut came out in 99?
I'm pretty sure.
I thought it came out a little bit before that.
I'm pretty sure it was 99.
Okay. I thought I was in Boston when that happened. I left Boston maybe? Around 97, 98.
I was pretty sure it was 1999.
98, maybe.
I mean, it could have been 98. Shit, now I can't even remember. Yeah. You don't have your tablet with you, so you can't check. Because I was like, because he always kind of does that. Hey, when is it? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not Google. Right. Like, sometimes I can remember, but I was pretty sure that Eyes Wide Shut and The Ninth Gate came out the same year.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but they came out, like, right around the same time.
Okay.
I thought, but I could be wrong. I know we even reviewed Eyes Wide Shut not too long ago, and now I can't even remember.
We can't keep days straight on all this shit.
I can't, it's funny because I remember old shit more than, you know what I mean? Like, I remember the year that, you know, movies that came out in the 70s and 80s, I usually remember that better than more recent, because more recent is just kind of like a smeary blur, you know what I mean? But yeah, so this movie is on... Actually, it's on pretty much every platform. We watch it on Amazon Prime. It's free on there. It's on Hulu. I think it's even on Tubi, so you can watch for free with commercials. So, if you dig, like, other Roman Polanski movies and you haven't seen this one or you haven't seen it in a long time, like, check it out. It's, like, kind of a cool mystery noir type of thing. And, like I said, it's about ancient satanic books. And who doesn't love that? I certainly love that. But, yeah. So, we will see you guys on the next one. Bye.